Gratefully, over its 40-year history, Insight for Living has accumulated an impressive collection of recorded sermons. In fact, we have the privilege of drawing from thousands of messages on a wide range of topics. Well, in recent days, we've chosen to feature not the older classics, but messages Chuck Swindoll delivered only a short while ago to the congregation he serves as senior pastor. On today's program, Chuck begins the final message in a fresh new four-part series called Epical Events Nobody Expected. To set the stage, Chuck reads the story recorded in 1 Kings chapter 19.
All Scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, reproof, for correction and instruction in righteousness, that the man or woman of God may be mature, capable of every good work. Our good works in life are directly connected to the carrying out of the teachings of the Scriptures, which is the reason that this becomes the core purpose of our worship as we understand the Scriptures better, we live better lives. None of us will ever arrive, but we are well along our way toward maturity the better we understand God's Word. As we will see today from 1 Kings chapter 19, the Lord doesn't hide the hard truth from those who read His Word. When He paints the pictures of His saints, He paints them very realistically. As one man put it, He paints them warts and all. So He does with Elijah, who has come to the end of his rope in this section we're looking at today. 1 Kings 19. If you have located the passage, I'm going to be reading from the New Living Translation only because it's a little bit easier to hear when you don't have a copy of the Scriptures in front of you. When Ahab got home, he told Jezebel everything Elijah had done, including the way he had killed all the prophets of Baal. So Jezebel sent this message to Elijah: "May the gods strike me and even kill me if by this time tomorrow I have not killed you just as you killed them." Elijah was afraid and fled for his life. He went to Beersheba, a town in Judah, and he left his servant there. Then he went on alone into the wilderness, traveling all day. He sat down under a solitary broom tree and prayed that he might die. "I've had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life, for I'm no better than my ancestors who have already died." Then he lay down and slept under the broom tree. But as he was sleeping, an angel touched him and told him, "Get up and eat." He looked around, and there beside his head was some bread baked on hot stones and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. Then the angel of the Lord came again and touched him and said, "Get up and eat some more, or the journey ahead will be too much for you." So he got up and ate and drank, and the food gave him enough strength to travel 40 days and 40 nights to to Mount Sinai. I speak especially today to you who suffer depression. You may have in the past, you may be in the slump of depression now. John Bunyan called it the slough of despond, where life is bleak, the future is black, and you feel like you cannot go on. Hopefully, by the time we have finished, you'll have another perspective.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To search the Scriptures with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insightworld.org/studies. And now the message from Chuck called A Sad Prophet and a Bad Queen.
You will break the bow if you keep it always bent. So goes the old Greek saying. Today we meet Elijah, whose bow has broken. He's finished. He's done with this thing called ministry. He's reached the end. And he asks God to take his life. Seems a strange story to include in a series called Epical Events. Nobody expected, but it fits. It just isn't on the upper end of the scale. It's at the bottom. The others were at the top of their game, we would say. An old, aging father, well over 100, willing to sacrifice his son, Isaac. An abused and abandoned man, willing to forgive his brothers who meant him harm and hoped he would die. An unknown teenager who kept his father's sheep and goats, and then upon visiting the battlefield at the Valley of Elah, saw a giant taunting the people of Israel and was willing to take his sling and a stone and take on the giant. Those are epical events. Well, so is this one. It's just at the bottom of life. For many of you have been, and some of you are. So, it is still one of those events no one would have expected, because this is Elijah. To this day, he's one of those prophets still revered by the people of the Jews. You travel to their country, you'll see statues built in his honor. But he's not bent low and pleading to have God take his life under a tree. He is, in fact, most often standing victorious after the killing of 450 prophets of Baal, having stood toe-to-toe against those idolatrous priests and prophets, and then ultimately seeing to their demise. What a victory for God. But here he is. And his bow is broken. You know, he isn't the only one in the Scriptures who despaired of life. Moses did. Jonah did. Paul did. You doubt that. Read the early part of 2 Corinthians. He came to the place where he despaired of life. We don't like to think about that and connect it to the name Paul, because he's one of our heroes. He's still one of our heroes. He's just a man. He's not a plastered saint that stands in the corner of the cathedral. He is just a man like Jonah, like Moses, like Peter, like Elijah, just a man. So I'm grateful that 1 Kings 19 has been preserved for all of us to read. And by the way, aren't you glad God is not still writing his word and including our names? Here we are for preachers to read about and tell other people about. But I want you to know today, I hold Elijah in highest regards and respect. More importantly, God does not write him off. In fact, God takes time to get him back on his feet. So God will not write you off. This is Elijah at the bottom. If you've ever been there, and many of you have, you need no explanation. You don't need a preacher to try to describe it to you. As one lady said who connected with me, having listened to our broadcast, she was in the middle of nowhere, and she said, I can still taste the barrel of the gun in my mouth. With my finger on the trigger when your broadcast came on. I don't know who you are. I don't know what your message is about, but somehow it was enough for me to pull the gun out of my mouth. And I heard her story, and she again was another victim of depression. It can happen to the best of us. There is no age limit. There is no gender preference. There is no immunity that's brought on because of maturity. You could hardly be more mature than Elijah. It can happen whether you are single or married, with children, with no children, living alone or with a house full of people. When it hits, your bow breaks. And you can't see any place but the end of the road. That's why he says, I've had enough. Remember the words of Corey Ten Boom? There is no pit so deep, but that he is not deeper still. There is no depression so black, but that he is there to understand and to get you through it. There are four characters in the story. There is a weak-willed king named Ahab, married to a strong-willed wife named Jezebel. There's a prophet, Elijah, of course, and the main of the four, the main character is God himself, who, interestingly, though he directs the story, steps into the scene and plays a vital role in Elijah's recovery. But it all starts with Ahab. Interesting marriage, this marriage between Ahab and Jezebel. Sort of a dysfunctional child-mother relationship. Ahab, like a little boy sniffling, slithers into the palace and tells Jezebel what's happened with the priests, the prophets. And even though he doesn't say to her, I'd like you to take over, that's what he wanted. And that's what she did. In fact, there's a mean streak in Jezebel that comes out very quickly as she hears her husband say what he does, and Very succinctly, the scripture reads, "So Jezebel sent this message to Elijah, 'May the gods strike me and even kill me if by this time tomorrow I have not killed you just like you killed them.'" Your history, Elijah. Now, before any of you is tempted to look for a reason to blame Elijah, have you ever had your life threatened? Probably not. So you don't know what you're talking about. You're speaking without experience. Strange things happen to your mind when you're threatened and you know you're being stalked and you know the gun is loaded or the knife is sharp. And the shadows there may hold the person that's out to get you and does something to you. I don't care if you are Elijah. Elijah read the threat or heard it, and that did it. You know what happened? His mind went blank. He didn't pray. He didn't fall before the Lord and ask for strength. All he could play was the words of the threat: "By this time tomorrow, by this time tomorrow, by this time tomorrow, you're done." And so he ran like a wounded deer. Did he ever? As best we can place him, he is fairly near Mount Carmel up in Galilee. He goes all the way to Beersheba, which is an oasis town at the bottom part of the territory we know today as Israel. 130 miles on foot. But he doesn't stop there. When he gets to Beersheba, he goes another day into the wilderness. Not a wilderness like the piney woods of East Texas, not that kind of forest, but a wilderness like a desert, where there's hardly a green shrub. And in the wilderness, he finds a lonely tree, and he falls in exhaustion under the tree, and he says, I've had enough. I'm done. Now, why would he do that? Let's do a little quick and dirty analysis right now so we can move on to the part that God plays that is so beautiful in how he handles him. First of all, Elijah wasn't thinking realistically or clearly. He failed to consider the source of the threat. It's Jezebel. Everything out of her mouth is corrupt. Every thought of her heart is wicked. It's Jezebel. My dad used to say to me, "Son, always remember the source of the hard information you're hearing. It's like when a mule kicks you, consider the source." When Jezebel threatens you, consider the source. But he didn't. He's not thinking clearly. His mind is playing tricks on him. He really believes it's only a matter of hours and she'll hunt him down. Second, I observe, he separated himself from strengthening relationships. You notice? He doesn't take a companion with him. Surely over the years, he has built up some friendships, some who would go along with him. But of course, those who are depressed tend to go alone into their hellhole of blackness. And that's where he is. Samuel Taylor Coleridge wrote, "Friendship is a sheltering tree." I've always loved that line out of his book, Youth and Age. and it's true. Friendship is like the cool shade under a tree on a hot day. But he has no friend. He has no shelter. So he's all alone. Isolation is invariably a weaker strategy than teamwork. Remember that. Because everything within you will say, just get alone, pull your shades, lock your door, keep them away. Third, I would say he was caught in the backwash of a great victory. Remember the story of the prophets of Baal? All of that had happened, and this is in the backwash of that. We were taught in the Marines not only to dig a hole, build it big enough for two guys, not just one, always two, but when we took an area immediately before you even sit down to eat, whatever it is you have to eat, set up a hasty defense. That was plan A in taking care of your own safety. He has no hasty defense. He's on his own in the middle of nowhere. And fourth, we have already established he's exhausted. That journey, what he had gone through in ministering for the Lord and standing against the prophets of Baal, all of that is exhausting, and he's had it. I understand. My hardest day is always Monday. Strange, I hate that. But it's a day my mind plays tricks on me, no matter how great a Sunday may have been. I tend to slump on Mondays, especially in the evenings. Hardest time of my day is usually the evenings, when the sun goes down and thoughts crowd in. But this isn't about me. Let me quote a far greater source. You'll be surprised to hear it. Charles Haddon Spurgeon, the prince of the preachers in Victorian England, who packed them out Sunday after Sunday. They were standing in the snow waiting for the church to open, even when he began his ministry. Magnificently gifted preacher. He wrote a book called Lectures to My Students. The seventh chapter is titled The Minister's Fainting Fits. It's an excellent chapter. Very vulnerable. Here are excerpts. The times most favorable to fits of depression, he writes, so far as I've experienced, may be summed up in a brief catalog. First, among them I must mention the hour of great success. When at last a long-cherished desire is fulfilled, when God has been glorified greatly by our means and a great triumph achieved, then we are apt to faint. It might be imagined that amid special favors, our soul would soar to heights of ecstasy and rejoice with joy unspeakable, but it is generally the reverse. And second, before any great achievement, some measure of the same depression is very unusual. May I interrupt for a moment? I found that true. Anticipating a ministry that's around the corner or coming up next week or will be a part of my life right away, I tend to slump. It's all I can do to get on the plane and to stay excited about what's going to happen. You would think the opposite, but the enemy has his way with all of us, and before any great achievement, it is easy for depression to set in. He goes on, surveying the difficulties before us, our hearts sink within us. Such was my experience when I first became a pastor in London. My success appalled me. Who was I that I should continue to lead so great a multitude?
It's possible, as you're listening today, you're identifying with the prophet. Like Elijah, you're wrestling with the dark cloud of discouragement. Well, please keep listening when Chuck Swindoll describes the biblical remedy. You're listening to Insight for Living, and in the event you missed any portion of Chuck's message today, remember you can easily listen online at insightworld.org. Chuck's Bible teaching originates from our international headquarters in Frisco, Texas, but I can assure you, this program would never make it outside the state without the support of our monthly companions and all those who give voluntary donations. Our monthly companions give a donation every month in the amount that best suits them, and in doing so, they're providing the fuel needed for taking Insight for Living all across North America and around the world. Maybe today's the day you'll step forward and become a monthly companion, too. If you're listening in the United States, it's quite simple to sign up when you call one of our friendly ministry representatives at 1-800-772-8888. Or you can sign up online at insight.org/monthly companion. Let me encourage you with a sample of what we hear from people who benefit from your generosity. Very recently, we received a warm note on our Facebook page from a woman who said, "Pastor Chuck, your voice has very often been the candle of light when I felt pain and deep sadness through my nights. Thank you for your ministry, and as surely as the sun will shine tomorrow, so will you. You are forever in all our collective hearts." Well, as a financial partner, you play a role in bringing a ray of light into the dark places of discouragement. And again, if you're listening in the United States, call us at 1-800-772-8888. You can also give a donation online at insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker, inviting you back tomorrow as Chuck Swindoll tells the story about a sad prophet and a bad queen, right here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, A Sad Prophet and a Bad Queen, and the sound recording were copyrighted in 2019 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.